this also or something? Does he? The cup?
Small enough that it may be more tractable.
Okay. So we, like always before Yontif, would like to learn something that will help us get a sense of the Yontif and get some sort of inspiration. This piece is taken from a Sefer Revolver. Revolver was a German Bal Musar. He actually was born not frum. His father was actually a professor, not religious. His mother was traditional. He was born in 1914. He was nifter in the 90s, 95 or so, and was able to give over a lot of the Musar in a language and ideas that really he was able to express himself extremely well and very powerfully. He was very famous in Eretz Yisrael, and this is taken, they've put together after his Ptira, they put together a lot of the Mamorim that he said, and this is one of them. So again, I'll try to first try to give introduction a minute to the point that he's talking about, where it's coming from. We'll see a small piece in the beginning, and then the main point that I'm trying to get to. We speak about Rosh Hashanah as a day of Malchus, which in a loose way is to confirm, to proclaim that God is King of the world. We tend to reduce it to sort of a very dry type of kind of mechanical argument of sorts. Is there a God? Is there proof of that? We definitely prove it. We know it to be true. Therefore, there's Hashem. Therefore, to listen to Him. We tend to think of sort of religion as being an argument that, you know, QED, there is a God. We have to listen to Him, and that's it. And so the avoda of Rosh Hashanah, I guess, would come out to be something the nature of bringing more proofs of some sort, or screaming loudly the truth you believe in. A lot of that leaves us kind of not satisfied. That's not the area that we really feel it's at. Certainly, as much as Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of tshuva, that's fine. That's personal, and that's sort of emotional depth. But in terms of Malchus, which is really the cornerstone of Rosh Hashanah, what is it about? Proclaiming and so on and so forth. So, I guess if we can ask ourselves, someone's asked me the following question: what is it that Torah adds about the understanding of God in this world? Or better said, I'm not proving, but what about science? Doesn't science give us a very clear sense of what God is or doing? And the answer is, on an external level, in other words, the shell of the world is science. All the pieces, how they work together, and everything. But what's the content of the world? What exactly is... So when we speak of God as the great designer and creator, so we're talking about the shell, but the world has in itself content which is so much more profound than the shell. What is good? What is bad? What is truth? All of those terms that seem to mean a lot is really the inner dimension of the world, and that's what Torah tries to give us. So whereas looking at the world as an outsider and observing it and being in awe of the complexity of it and so on, that gives us a respect for the external aspect, but the internal aspect of it, the content of the world, is expressed in much deeper points and ideas. So he starts off, and a little bit it's cut off on the side in the next page, so you'll have to trust me that I'm filling in the right letters. I just noticed it now. Unfortunately, it's hard to get the Sefer exactly aligned. So it starts off on page Pei, and basically his point is, let's look at Pei Aleph. The second paragraph is sort of, it makes his point. Devarav Zal Hina Mevola Malchius, he quotes a Ramban here. that the point of Malchius is umizboya mehem ke inyan amalchius u inyan gilui Malchus Yisparach. In other words, really what we're trying to do is unveil it. And this is an idea made many times, that proving is kind of mechanical, but what we're trying to do is to unveil HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. And when a person does something, so for instance, the concept of kindness is, it's a concept, it's a book's concept. When a person acts kindly, and acts kindly in a way that's beyond his, he sort of steps above his own natural selfishness, that's a revelation of kindness in this world. A person that sticks to truth, even when the truth may not be good for him, or whatever it is, thank you very much, then a person is sort of revealing these things. So if we're to ask ourselves, what is the right, what are we doing in this world that Hashem is not doing? The answer is, Hashem put everything into the world. But until a person doesn't discover it and show it, it's not revealed. Let's give a very simple example. Electricity as potential existed in the world from the day the world was created. So did atomic energy, and who knows what else. Until someone didn't come along and put a finger on it and say, here it is, look at it, and look, and you can duplicate it and you can make it happen, it was not revealed. It existed, but was not revealed. So man is the only one in this world that can reveal hidden things in this world. And that's why, parenthetically, Adam is called a medaber. Man's greatest trait is speech, because we're able to put a caption to things. So when things happen, they happen, and nothing says anything. But when things come in this world and man says, this is the meaning of this, and this is the meaning of this, it becomes revealed. So Malchuso Yisbarach means God's revelation within the world, his fingerprints, his expression through the world. We're not talking about the external creation of the mechanics of the world, of the chitzonis of the world. We're talking about what divinity did Hashem put into this world. This world is a physical world, and on a slide, on a microscopic slide, it shows physical things. Everything that we look under a slide, on a microscope of sorts, we ask ourselves, how is it engineered to sustain itself, to survive, to last? But the second question is, what is this saying? I mean, it's very popular today to say Pirkei Shira. And, this is a... It's a few pages of what every animal says, a pasuk. It doesn't mean that the animals say these psukim, but it means that every animal, its nature and something about it, past the mechanics of it, is saying something, and we pick up a divine spark from the content. What is it about each animal that is its content? And those psukim are meant to convey it. Some are easier to understand, some less. But at any rate, Malchus refers specifically not to God himself, but God's expression within the world. So just like if a person puts on a play, and if the play has meaning to it, I ask myself, what is the author trying to tell me? And I can analyze a play on two levels. I can analyze it in terms of what pieces did he use, and what's the message that the person meant to give through that play. That's the way in which we look at things. So Malchus refers specifically to to the elements that HaKadosh Baruch Hu left in the world, or better said, is constantly inspiring the world with, that represents some of that content. And man is the Bria, the creation that's supposed to express that. There's a phrase like that in the Gemara. It says, Ha'avos Hein Hein HaMerkava. The patriarchs are the chariot upon which God comes riding into this world. For instance, until Avram came around, kindness was not as pronounced as Avram. So people said, yeah, there is kindness. It was an idea, an ideal, a nice idea, but it was hard to see it. Avram Avinu, with his exceptional kindness, exceptional charity, all of a sudden brought down the concept of kindness that surpasses the physical world. Yitzchak, with his total self-negation, self-sacrifice, showed that, and so on. Each one brought that into it. So the avoda of Malchus is to somehow bring it into this world, and primarily it's always by our own actions. When somebody see, you know, when people say we have to be a light amongst the nations, publishing stuff and printing stuff and putting on shows is not really what convinces people. Acting in a certain way, if we were a nation where people would say, you know, these people, a word is a word, they'll never go back on their word, I assure you it would be a light unto nations. Or these are people you can never catch losing their self-control and self-discipline. If this was the case, we would be incredible. People would flock, or minimally they would say there's something more to life than just living the day. We're not quite there yet. But Malchus is that expression. If that's true, then what are the obstacles? In other words, what are the deeper issues that we struggle with that are a block to Malchus? In other words, once we've taken Malchus out of the realm of a kind of mechanical proof and disproof of God, or obedience, not obedience, do the mitzvahs, not do the mitzvahs, and we're talking about really sort of showing that the content of the world supersedes its container, that there's a divine content of the world, and we could bring it out. So that means that a person has to see himself as a vessel for bringing that out. It sounds wonderful. What are the deeper issues that we have that especially block this? So that's going to be the point of this. So let's look at the next page. So his introduction is more, it's sort of, these were shmuzen that he said in Ber Yaakov, where he was the Mashgiach. And he basically said every year he would speak on one theme, sort of a series. So it has that element of continuity, and that's why I sort of just gave a synopsis of where it's coming from. Okay, Peihei. Let's look at Peihei, that left on the second page, the left hand column. Ketzav Mizgala Malchusa. So up till now, his lead up, I sort of condensed his lead up, that the purpose of Malchus is that we reveal to the world what it is. So now he says, Ketzav Mizgala Malchusa Yisbarchadei Maisa Adam. So what are the main... we're not talking about specific mitzvahs as much as the main character trait, the main underpinnings of this process. So he's going to take a Gemara and which the Gemara actually is telling us the opposite, and point out those areas, and those, that's what we'll speak about. How does a person serve as a platform to reveal HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Mizbaya b'shilu perekzayin de sota behod de dalad e mekamlot neishchina. There's a Gemara in Sota that says there are four groups of people that are not going to greet the Shechina. They are katleitzim, scoffers. That's, I guess, the best cynics, maybe. Kat shkarim, liars. Kat chanofim are people that they flatter people. And again, the word flattery here is not the nice, oh, how nice your shoes look. The flattery here is telling somebody who did something wrong that he's okay. Yes, you would definitely justify the way you yelled at this person and embarrassed him publicly because you have to show him a lesson, even though you know that the person did something bad. I refer you back to a Yom Iyun. You can ask Rabbi Reingold for the tapes. We spoke all about it and so on in great detail. The Kat, and that was not Chanufa, Rabbi Reingold. That belonged to Emes, not to Chanufa. Kat Misapri Lashon Hara. People who speak Lashon Hara. Now, so generally speaking, when we speak of reward and punishment, we tend to sort of flatten it out the way we would a bank account. So if a person has an estate that I'm interested in selling off, so I say, this amount of dollars are in the checking account. This amount is in stocks that we can sell off and get such and such amount. This amount is in property we can sell off and probably get this. We add it up, we have a dollar amount. Olam Haba doesn't work like that. Just like life for us, if a person is someplace that he likes or doesn't like, it's usually a lot more complex. I like the way I was accepted, but I don't like this, I like that, I like the other thing. There are different dimensions. Mekablam pnei Shechina means they're able to greet the Shechina. And these four groups are singled out as not greeting the Shechina. First of all, these are all things that's hard to pinpoint the exact Aveira. Lashon Hara is an exact Aveira. Chanufa, Litzanis, Shkarim. In different contexts, it might be an Aveira, a specific Aveira, but hard really, it's more a severe character flaw. And also, it specifically speaks about Mekablam Pnei Shechina. So let's explain what that would mean and why it's he's going to compare it. One of the reasons why he'd compare it to him. Let's give an example. Imagine a person, I invite somebody, I tell somebody, you know, I owe you one. I'd like to invite you for supper tonight. And I come to the house, the person sits me down next to a table that's really set very lavishly, and I eat. The host never shows up, and when I finish, he wishes me well and tells me good night. And most of us would feel very insulted. We'd feel kind of, I mean, you don't show yourself. It's like the potatoes and the meat is here, and where are you? But it's something which is a statement. The world of reward, of schar, Hashem does not miss out on one detail. And if we did a mitzvah, we're going to get rewarded for it. Kabbalas Pnei Shechina means that I perceived Hashem in the mitzvahs. The process we were speaking about, where the world has content, mitzvahs also have a content. So if I do a mitzvah that's technically correct, but no sense of the divine in it, then that would be the same type of reward. We don't have exact words because we're talking about spiritual experience, but the idea would be, and it would be parallel to this experience. If we would not have a sense of Hashem in our mitzvah, then the reward has the same flavor as being invited to somebody's house, being fed and stuffed, with the person just not bothering to show up at the table. Same idea. Those are called people that are not bekalt neshchina. And therefore, these four areas are... It means that a person who engages in this constantly, this is who he is. It's not just that he did it. Katlet means this is the type of person he is. He belongs to that group. That's something that cancels out the effect of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Bria. And so we have four areas that Chazal tell us are the opposite of what we're looking for. We're looking for Malchius, which is going to be the expression of God in this, and we're going to find the opposite of it. So, he says like this, and he adds another proof that this is the piece that's relevant. He says, Ayin Sham de Meivel Ka'echad Ve'echad Raya Mi Pasuk. So, each one has a Pasuk that the Gemara uses to show that the person disassociates himself with Shechina. Kat litzonim laleitzim dechsev mashach yodas lotzim. It says God has withdrawn His hand from those alotzes. In other words, He doesn't associate with them. Va'ayim b'mashos shemedayik mitchilas hapasuk yom alkenu shemedubah b'rosh Hashana. So the Mashal finds that this pasuk is especially, there's a hint in it. Not only does the person not have the Shechina, we're talking about Rosh Hashanah. So he says as follows: Vehine im dalet kites elu ein mekavos pnei Shechina michlal lavat Hashemir hein. So obviously these are the four crucial areas where on the one hand we black out Hashem if we are sunk into this. On the other hand, obviously whatever is the opposite direction brings out Hashem. And he's going to explain each one of these, and this is really what I want to focus on. So, Aleph. Inyan Litzanis. So, Mevuah Mesos Yesharim Shu Tchias HaDvarim Mehalev Shlo Yasu Roishim Kimogin HaMashuach B'Shemen Shachit Zinofim Mimenu. Let's talk about these four. Let's talk about what he means over here. What's the power of cynicism? What's the power of what's called litzanis? So I don't know if cynicism is the perfect translation, as much as a lack of seriousness. It means that we, in order for something to have an effect on us, it has to connect to us. Let's take an example. Let's take a simple example. If I take a person who is a grown-up person and he's about to enter society, he's about to go for an interview, an important meeting and meet people, go out on a date or something, and I tell him, you look dressed like a, your dress looks like a clown. So the person would get very upset, very tense, very worried, you know, and he would be very conscious of it. If a kid walks out of the house and I tell him, you look like a clown, he might think that that's quite nice, you know, maybe now I could be the class clown. It doesn't bother him. So that's true. Obviously, there's a certain maturity level. It's also a psychological device for pushing something away that it not affect you. For those of you who had the pleasure of raising children at Yisrael, there's mazam, mize manyen, like, who cares? That's like a certain age range. You'll tell a kid something, the response will be, I couldn't care less. Litzanis is a tool that allows you to sort of disassociate from something. It's a very, very powerful tool. there are times when it's extremely good. Things that shouldn't bother you, what other people think and so on and so forth, those are very good times to use it. But when it comes to right and wrong, there's no way, you know, when they started, you know, when you're trying to talk to somebody about Shmiras Mitzvahs, religion, anything of that nature, if the person argues, then you have a chance. If the person laughs and says, "Get a life, buddy, I'm off to the movies," there's no chance, because there's no place of engagement. There is nothing there that I can engage with. I'll tell him, I really can't care. You know, I really, those things don't, it just couldn't care less. So litzanis is a way, when we see something that's very serious and we should take note of it, the easy way to dissociate is litzanis. So basically it means we've effectively, emotionally pushed Hashem out of this world, because it doesn't bother me. And it's in a certain sense it's a defense mechanism. Person knows he's not doing right, pushes it off. But that, you can't feel the Shekhinah in the world if you've made a wall between you and it. And litzanis, so litzanis doesn't mean a person who makes an acute remark, a joke. It means a person who approaches life frivolously, does not give life its seriousness, and so on. Responsibility, all of these things. So he says, the Mishlshorim says litzanis is a terrible what's the right word? It's a defense mechanism that's really very hard to break through, because he compares it to an armor that is well oiled. So anything that touches it just slips off. The Gemara says that a punishment for someone who is mislotzeis, for someone who falls in that category, is pain. Because if there's one thing we can't shrug off, it's a real pain. And at some point, when a person is suffering enough, God forbid, then a person becomes very serious. It could be physical pain, God forbid. It could be emotional pain. It could be different things. But sometimes the breakthrough happens when I can't shrug it off anymore. When I succumb to it, and then I begin to say to myself, "No, life is serious." I don't mean it in the direct way of, "Okay, so God brought this pain to me. I must do what He tells me." That's reducing it to kind of a game. What I'm saying is, I say to myself, "You know, life is bigger than just day-to-day events, and I need to begin to take things seriously." Okay, so he says, litzanis is not stam b'dicha. It's not just it's not just a joke. Ela b'dicha mechuvenes litchais kol ha'ara shel Torah v'leiv. It's a type of joke that it's meant to push away any type of serious conversation, serious suggestion. The first step in Malchus is the sense I want to engage. I want to engage, and I want to start dealing with it. That's the first step towards having that sense of Malchus. Two, base. Imkat shakarim ena mekablim, hare emes hi kabbalas mei shchina. If it says that people who are liars, and once again, we're not talking about the act of lying itself. That's an avera under certain circumstances. It's not quite an avera, but it's bad behavior. You're talking about a person that seeing things the way they are, versus seeing the way he would like them to be, he chooses to see things that he like them to be. Emes doesn't talk to him. I read a story once, a personal account, And it's an amazing account of a big person and a young boy. There is somebody in Eretz Yisrael today, Admeyev Esrim. He's Rav Shach's son-in-law. His name is Rabbi Bergman, very special person. And he wrote, he was a young boy, an orphan. He was brilliant. And he slept in the Chaznish's house for a while. I don't remember exactly why. He must have been in some yeshiva. He came from Yerushalayim, must have been in some yeshiva in Bnei Brak. There was no place for him. The Chaznish kept him in his house. And I guess the Chaznish felt that he's somebody he wants to work with. He was a young boy, kind of bar mitzvah age. And he wrote a sefer at a young age. And he and the Chaznish saw it. And the person writes, he writes, you know, a piece that he had written. And the piece was brilliant, but clearly not right. He was saying a pshat in the Rambam that answered many difficult points. He based it on something the Rambam seemed to say, but it can't be what the Rambam meant. The technical halachic issue. That's not. And he was a bright boy, eager to show how bright he was. Not in a bad way, but, you know, it definitely was extremely brilliantly constructed. And the Chaznish saw it. And Chaznish got very annoyed. And he said, but it's not true. The Rambam does not hold that. He cannot hold that. So he started arguing, saying, but this is... And he said, it was like the rare time the Chaznish showed impatience. And he told him, if you persist with this, I just don't want to have anything to do with you. A person who's not emes is not something I want to have anything to do with. It's against the grain of everything I am. You know, your arguments. He probably would have made a brilliant lawyer at some point. Phenomenal arguments, irrefutable. But he knew down deep that's not pshat in the Rambam. It can't be. That's what the Rambam's sheet is. And the Chaznish, by the Chaznish, emes was more than anything else. So we're not talking about an opportunistic lie, which is not right. And chances, if you take opportunistic lies, they become your truth. But we're talking about a person who needs to see things the way that he's comfortable, rather than emes. So let's look at it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's seal is emes. Chosom HaKadosh Baruch Hu is emes. When I on Rosh Hashanah, when we talk about Hashem, we talk about emes. And if I don't have those glasses, if my glasses are out of focus, how will I see a straight line? There was one of the Gedolim at Yisrael when I came in the early 70s. He passed away somewhere in the middle of the 70s. Was Rav Chatzkel Abramsky. And Rav Chatzkel Abramsky was a Talmud of Chaim Briska. He had been the Rav of London, the Dayan, the chief Dayan of London, Rav Dayan for during the war years. He came to Eretz Yisrael. He wrote a lot of, he wrote a bunch of Sfarim. He was a recognized Adam Gadol, extremely weighed and measured person. I once went to hear a shir from him. He lived in Beit Dagan. Every word of his was like exact and precise. It was very, very regal and not a motion and not a word out of place. A very interesting, very fascinating person. And somebody had the following dilemma. He said, in those days in Israel, there was a lot of taxes, customs duties on imported stuff. If you brought in and didn't declare it, or declared that you don't have anything and you got away with it, you're able to make a tidy penny on whatever you brought in. There were like many goods had 200-300% customs on it, and if you brought it in and got away with it, you sold it for twice what you paid for it, and you made some money on it. Some people felt this is an easy way to make money, and especially if the person justified it, he's learning whatever. So, someone at Queens like went to ask Rav Chatzkel Abramsky if he allowed to do it. So he said, absolutely not. So the person persisted, why not? He said, it's Bittul Torah. In other words, it will affect your Torah study. So this person said to him, no, but I'll be able to have money and be able to study. So Rav Chassid Vramsky said, when lying becomes a way of life, your mind becomes crooked. And since Torah is straight, there's no way it can fit into a crooked mind. And this is the type of emes we're talking about. If a person learns to see things the way they are, Hashem is emes. And therefore we would also, the world would open up and we would see a lot of it. But if we obfuscate it and we project what we want to see, then we're not going to see Hashem. So the second group is shakranim. Imkat shakranim mekablim. Hari emes hikabolas pei shchina. Kimedumani shamaral kosev al mayim azeh. Shumechaven ladal oisiyas shem avaya baruch hu. So the moral explains that these four, this is sort of a Kabbalah thing, we don't need it. It's that you have the four letters of God's name, these four are connected to that. He explains how. I don't want to go off into a side thing. But it means that learning emes is mekabel pnei shchina. I want to add a point to this, which I think is helpful. You know, when we raise children, when we have children mechanech, so obviously telling the truth is very important, and we get annoyed and upset when kids do not tell the truth, they lie or sort of stretch the truth. We usually react by saying how bad lies are and so on. It usually starts a process, you know, a kind of a tug of war. Whenever you address things as bad, nobody wants to be bad, so there's resistance, there's kind of denial, etc. It's because we don't ever see emes in its positive side. When we recognize things as they are, so if we were able to be mechanech our children, I know it's hard to look at the emes and see the emes and acknowledge it. It's hard for everybody. But if we get into the habit, we'll see things the way they are. And, you know, I remember there was somebody in the Mir Yeshiva. When I came to the Mir Yeshiva, he was not part of the Hanhal, he was not one of the Rebbeim, but he was the most chashev person of the students. He was close to 40. He was already a Rosh Yeshiva somewhere, but he would come to Yeshiva one Seder a day. His name was Reb Chaim Kamil, Zechein Vracha. And it's fascinating. He was not a man of the world, but he sat and learned. But one of his hallmark traits was to say things the way they are, and even if it meant he wasn't saying a brilliant chiddush, he would say, this is the way it looks to me. And people began to respect it because they knew that you would get the core of how it is. People would also speak to him about life situations, about advice. And myself, personally, I'd asked him a few times. And the thing you always got from him was, because he had learned to look at things the way they are, the answer you got was always very common sense. Like, you realize after you got through talking with him, that he was able to see straight. You presented the facts, but you also embellished them. You also added some of your stuff. And he would naturally sort of stick to the point and say, well, if A and B are true, I don't understand why the next step is not C. And it was that trait of emes that you saw carried over into everything. So the second item that's necessary to bring Hashem into this world is able to see things with emes. Gimel, chanufa, hahefer shal chanufu ben chayrit. When we're talking about flattery, so again, we're not talking about you know, telling somebody a nice thing. The halach is you're supposed to. The people tell who come to you and say, you know, I think you're very stupid. and I'm, because I'm an ish emes, I only like emes, and I can't bear to tell you, but that's, I'll tell it to your face. Those people are usually cruel and far from emes, because they don't talk about themselves like that. They usually talk to other people like that, and the halacha is not like that. The halacha is that if it's relevant to a person's feelings, then you certainly can say whatever it is that you know, it's a first halacha, it's a sugya. But when you're talking about justifying wrong just because it's helpful to you, that's chanufa. Telling somebody who's doing something wrong that he's doing something right is, we're talking about morally wrong, that is chanufa. What's the dynamics behind chanufa? The dynamics behind chanufa is that I see people as my God, not Hashem. Everybody needs approval. We're built that way. So a child needs approval from his parents and Rebbeim. That's very important. That's how a child learns to be good. That's how a child begins his path. But then when we grow up and we need approval also, so the one from whom we should seek approval from is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's the ultimate good, he's the standard, and I need to measure up. But it's easier for us to fix on people. We need our neighbors, our friends, our immediate superiors, in different degrees, and that's where we get chanufa. So instead of Hashem being the master of the world, it's people. I've crowned people, because that's what I defer to. If you say it's right, it's right. That's really what I'm saying. So it's not just that you're encouraging that person. Again, the particular problem is you're encouraging that person to do bad things. You possibly are encouraging other people to do bad things. But in a way is you are cutting out Hashem from the world. Because if my immediate superior was in the room, and his superior was in the room, I would defer to him because I know he can have his head roll and he's more powerful. But if this is the most powerful person in my scope, then this is where I defer to. So it's a certain sense of crowning people as my God. And that is the opposite of Malchus in its own way. So learning to do what's right. And it doesn't mean being antagonistic. But on the other hand, the person should say, if it's wrong, it's wrong. And, you know, the same way, you know, any type of deference, being ashamed of doing what's right because somebody else mocks me, those are all from the same, they come from the same root. The other person's approval of me is most important. And he says something fascinating, he adds something. Ha-hefer shel chanifa hu ben chayrin. The opposite of chanifa is being a free person. Because as long as I'm beholden to people, I am a slave. And maybe since we mentioned the name before, Reb Chaim Kamil, I won't tell of a story that I had with him, a particular advice that I sought. I won't discuss the exact topic, but I came to him with a dilemma where I was being torn in different directions by different advice. And he obviously sensed that that my being torn in directions, not because I didn't know what to do, he felt clearly that I knew what was the right thing to do, but it was my deference to people because of whatever. I was not married yet. So he told me, oh, he had a way of speaking. He spoke slowly. He was a very methodical thinker, very slowly. Everything he said to Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says, there was once a man walking with his son and a donkey. And the father was riding on the donkey, the son was walking along. And someone walks by and he says, shame on you. Your son is a young boy, he's having to walk, and you're sitting like a pirate on top of the donkey, you should be ashamed of yourself. So he got off the donkey and put his kid on it. They walk another mile, they meet another person. And he says, what a chutzpah. Your father is walking and you're sitting down on the donkey? Chutzpah. So the son got off and he and the son and the donkey all walked. A third person came by and said, what an absurdity. There's a donkey here, two people, and nobody's riding on anything. So they took the donkey and put it on their shoulders and carried the donkey. So Reb Chaim Kamel told me the moral of the story is, if you listen to everybody's advice, you'll end up carrying the donkey on your shoulders. That was the way he said it. And again, he didn't mean, he meant because he felt that I sort of needed this approval, that approval, the other approval, and I think that was the point of it. Vehine, he says, and the last paragraph, Mama Oro Lena Srachik Mishrapsus Khalifa, Uma Niflo Shiz Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah said that a person should even endanger himself, but not to engage in Chanufa. And that was actually, there's a halakha discussion, I touched on this point. It's obviously not real Pikuach Nefesh, but it means a difficult situation. Finally, let's look at the next page, Dalit. Al kat misapri lashon hara meviya gemara pasig liyugur hara. People who speak lashon hara, the pasuk says liyugur hara, bad shall not dwell with you. Vachidish bazeh ki lashon hara is not eno. I'll just cut off a little bit. Mikra sadiva asa elaho chacha al roa haadam vahefach hu tov levachesed. So let's take Lashon Hara. So sometimes Lashon Hara is a calculated. I want to knock this person, I'll say something bad about him, knock that person, I'm bad about him. But people are always saying Lashon Hara, they're negative people. They're people, you get the sense that everything in the world is bad. I used to have a friend. He was actually a very chashva person, but he had a sharp way of bringing a point home. So I was once speaking with him about something or other, and he said, "So the bottom line of this conversation is the whole world is crazy except for us two. And to be honest, I'm not sure about you." When a person gets into speaking Lashon Hara, it's kind of, you always see the negative. Now let's take an example where. For the vast majority of us, yes, when we deal with our children, we might have a lot of negative things to tell them. But when someone else calls us out about our children, we always say, I want you to know, I know there are issues, but he's a good kid at heart. I've almost never met a parent in the Chanukah that the parent has to start saying, you don't have to tell me, I know my kid has this issue. But he's a really good kid. And when we deal with the issue, so with our own children, and certainly with ourselves, we're going to sit in a week or so, in a week and a half, and say a long list of avers we do. And none of us think that we're wicked people, because we see ourselves as good. We have a good eye for ourselves. I once heard from Rav Minahar, this is a long time ago, he said, I think he said it from Rav Cook, he was a Talmud Rav Cook, he said, Ayin Tov means a sympathetic cook of the Bria, a sympathetic eye on the Bria. You can see a person, we're not talking about denying shortcomings, we're talking about seeing a person as good. Hashem created a world that's full of good. A positive eye doesn't mean a blind eye, but it means like you look at your child. My perspective on a child starts as good, and if I'm honest, I know the areas I need to work on. That's true about every other human being. It's true about everything in the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a world that's tov, and there are things that need to be fixed. That's why we're here. But a person is constantly griping, constantly sniping, constantly, and you get into it. So then everything is seen from a perspective like that. So where did HaKadosh Baruch Hu leave his mark in the world? If everybody's an idiot, a fool, a bad person, self-interested, etc. So where is HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world? But where I see in people the good, when I see in people what's good, then I see the nekuda of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in each person. And yes, people have shortcomings, but that's why we're here. So basically, to sum up, the Rosh Hashanah is first and foremost finding HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world and revealing it to the world. And we do it by shaping ourselves in a certain way. And we start with the foundation, with these foundations, these four areas that are mekabel pnei shchina. If the reward for these areas and the punishment is whether or not I'll see Hashem in the world to come, whatever that means, it means that these are the qualities that are needed to perceive Hashem in the world. And there are four areas, and these are very difficult areas, but they go to the heart of what it means to see Hashem. One is, I need to care about Elokus. If the divine is not something that speaks to me, then of course I'm not going to see it, I'm not going to find it, because I've cut myself off from it. We have the area of Tzeres Letzanis. We have the area of Sheker and Emes, looking at things the way they are, not trying to project our own desires on it, because Hashem is not what we want, Hashem is what is. And it sometimes is then Yisurim Chas V'Shalom, whatever it is, it's being able to see things with Emes. We then have the disengaging from accepting people as our gods, because if people are our gods, Hashem will never be our God. And finally, it's developing a sense to see the Bria as Tov, and that sometimes there are people that's not easy to see it, but it's you develop a certain eye at seeing what could be there. It's a businessman prides himself, a developer, when he sees a house. If everybody thinks it's a mansion, he's got nothing to do here. But if everybody thinks that this has no potential and he sees the potential, that's where he steps in. It's looking at the world that way and seeing Tov in the world is really perceiving Hashem in the world. The Hashem is the point of Tov. And what needs to be fixed is what's lacking, what we need to do. So the Avodah of Malchus is more, it's certainly not mechanical reinforcing and proving God, the proofs. It's not just yelling and proclaiming it. It means developing ourselves, I call them emotion, perspectives, faculties, whatever you want to call these, that perceive, that they allow us to sense a world full of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if we would feel that way, if we would honestly feel that way and perceive the world that way, it rubs off. People's honest attitudes, people's honest perspectives affect other people more than words, more than debates. And Bez Hashem, we should be Zohar to Mekabel Malchus in its full sense of this word, as on the seeing and feeling Hashem as the content of the world, and become a platform for radiating that to the world at large.